You are tuned to KBBI Homer, AM 890. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. The time is 9.03 a.m. And you're listening to The Coffee Table, and emergency preparedness is the topic. Guests in the studio today are from the Kenai Peninsula Borough Office of Emergency Management, Dan Nelson. Hi, Dan.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. And brand new fire chief for the Homer Volunteer Fire Department, Mark Kirko. Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And welcome. We'll be asking you some questions later.
Thanks.
Also, Robert Purcell. Robert is on the board of KBBI, also has worked for FEMA for, gosh, how many years did you work?
17 years.
17 years, and has been instrumental in helping KBBI develop their emergency plan. And Ryan Browning from the Homer Police Department. Hi, Ryan.
Good morning.
All right. The first thing I want to tell people is that a week from today at 10:20 Alaska time in the morning, there will be a test of the EAS, the Emergency Alert System, which means that the radio stations, the television stations, the alarms out in public, the speakers out in public. Oh, wait, Dan's already on this. Go, Dan. What's going to happen?
So with this national periodic test, one thing that's a little bit different is we're doing something in the national level that is a little bit old-fashioned in that we're really relying on folks like KBBI and the broadcasters to get that message out. So
You want to see how it works without internet.
Without the internet, without some of the newer technologies that we use. So folks won't see it on their cell phones and those types of things. So we won't be testing the tsunami sirens at the same time this time around, but really it's for our partners and the broadcasters to help get that out. So if you're tuned to KBBI or somewhere else, you'll definitely hear it.
Well, that brings me to my first point, being the radio station, the importance of AM radio. Because when your cell phone doesn't work, when your internet is down, when your TV, when the electricity is out, you could still get AM radio even across the bay from here. And so if anyone within the sound of my voice doesn't have an old school AM radio that takes batteries or a crank, then, or both, preferably both, then you should get one. Or what do you think, Robert?
Well, certainly, and then people also have the radios in their cars as well. So if you don't have one, that's what you can use. But I recommend everybody have a basic radio, and I like the crank radios. I have one myself. That way you don't have to worry about batteries. Oh. I always think of everything that can go wrong. And with that, you know, if you still have enough muscle to crank the crank, you're going to have enough electricity. And a lot of them also double as flashlights and do other things. It's a great tool, and they're inexpensive.
Say, let's start with Ryan Browning and Mark Kirko. What is it that you recommend that a person have in their home, Mark?
Well, starting with a plan, start making a plan now for any type of event that we could see here in the Homer area. Think about having a go bag. And that radio and flashlight and all those things that would go along with that to have in there. Plans for meeting family members when, obviously, kids might be at school, mom and dad might be at work, family members, parents, you know, you're separated. You might be 7 or 8 different locations here in town. There needs to be a plan for where you folks are all going to get together and meet when and if the time comes that you'd have to do that. So, working that out ahead of time, and then actually next week maybe drilling on that type of event. That's going to be important for everybody.
And the Office of Emergency Management webpage has, I've got in my hands right now, the family communication plan, knowing so that everybody knows everybody's numbers and they're all written in one place, probably 2 or 3 places.
Yes.
And then the other is the emergency supply list of things you should get together.
Definitely. And those lists are great. They are suggestions. So each family might have different circumstance. But one thing on there that I think you've got in front of you is there's a great plan that the state of Alaska puts out that we encourage, which is a program over 12 weeks to build that kit. So if that's something you haven't done before, you haven't thought about, don't want you going out and having to spend all kinds of money at once. It's something you can add 3 or 4 items to your weekly shopping trip. At the end of 12 weeks, you've got a kit. So real easy to follow, and we encourage folks to follow that and customize it to your own circumstance.
And when we post this coffee table on our website, we'll also include a link to the Kenai Peninsula Borough Office of Emergency Management gosh, what is that page called?
We have our Be Prepared page.
The Be Prepared page. That's easy to remember. Yeah. So Ryan Browning from the Homer Police Department, you were here when November 30th, mm-hmm. when the earthquake happened. Yeah. We had our tsunami warning. What was that day like for the police department?
It started out as a normal day. It was pretty quiet. And I was just getting ready for work and felt the building start to shake. We kind of have an informal policy that if we feel, more than a few seconds can feel the building shake, we start calling bodies in. So we started calling guys in and then went out and kind of sectored off the low-lying areas in town and started doing evacuations. And actually, it was really easy for us. Most people were already gone by the time we got there. I think maybe we talked to less than a dozen people who were still in their houses and were getting ready to go. And I think part of that was the sirens going off every 10 or 15 minutes or however long it was that people got the seriousness of, okay, we need to leave. And like I said, most folks were gone, that early in the morning or were getting ready to go, and we didn't have any issues at all. It was really, really smooth.
But that does bring me to what we were referring to earlier. At a certain time of the day, maybe your whole family is in the same place and you can account for them and they're all together. But for much of the day, that's not true. People are all over the place. Kids are at school or they're at activities. People are at work or they're wherever they are. This family communication plan can help with that.
I think so. And one of the things, I think it starts with sitting down at a breakfast or at a dinner together as a family and having this conversation. That's the first step. And I encourage anybody who's listening to this to do that. You want to do the checklist, you want to do the other things, but the first thing is to have that conversation with the family that you as a family are going to take this seriously, get everybody's input, take notes, everybody's buy-in and what their role is and what their suggestions are. Because as Dan mentioned, every family is going to build their own strategy based on their needs, and that has to start with those conversations. So I think that's the first step. If everybody will have that conversation in the next few days, we're stepping off in the right direction. And I think the tsunami warning, this last one, which where there was a real threat, a substantial threat, fortunately it didn't develop, was a good example of those people in the low-lying areas taking the appropriate action, because the timing is so short that you can't wait for confirmation.
Absolutely.
So is there anything else you want to say about that? I see you nodding vigorously.
No, I just agree with him. People were gone, and I think realized the importance of it because you don't know how much time we have. And, a lot of people are getting information or rumors from Facebook and social media like that, and, trying to get accurate information out and timely is really important, having people the ability to get that information. So
there are a lot of things that, we were talking about earthquake and tsunami. One thing I learned, because Office of Emergency Management has amazing materials, and thank you for putting those out. One thing I learned is, there's a lot of things about rebuilding and what's going to happen after. And Robert Purcell even brought this up in the notes before we had this conversation. A lot of people who are listening do have a plan for the emergency and for the 3 days to a week after. But a long-term plan is also very important. I can tell you from personal experience, when I went through a hurricane and the overseas highway was closed for weeks, and that was the only, overland way to get in and out. And it was 3-4 weeks before anyone was allowed on and off who wasn't on official business. And so having those plans for how you're going to conduct your life and how you're going to get what you need are really important. Robert, can you talk a little bit about what a long-term plan would look like and for how long?
Well, long-term is until you have recovered to the new normal. And one of the concerns that I've had, because I've seen it so often, I've gone to many disasters around the country, including in Alaska, is in some cases this takes years. But for businesses, for example, do they have a business plan where they have their records off-site? Copy of their records, maybe on the cloud somewhere, so that they can rebuild their business. For individuals, people have homeowners insurance, but in a tsunami, the flooding event isn't covered. Earthquake, that's not covered either. Those are special policies. You're actually working potentially with 3 different insurance companies. If you haven't purchased those policies and you have a loan on your house, you still owe the balance on that loan. And the amount of assistance that's actually available to you is limited. And I think that's what's important in people planning, that the FEMA will come in with a maximum grant of maybe $32,000 or so. But most people don't get that. I was looking at the Harvey figures. The average FEMA grant was around $3,000. The average payment from a flood insurance policy was $117,000. So when people think in terms of actually potentially losing their business or their home, do they really have a plan for that? Because it's a real risk. And it takes months and years to rebuild. And so we focus on that immediate life safety aspect, as we should, because that's the highest priority. But people also in their planning should say, if I live in an area where I'm likely to lose my home, or anybody can, with an earthquake, what are the consequences and what's my plan to recover? Because FEMA's focus is going to be temporary housing and some limited financial assistance, but it's going to be a Small Business Administration loan or your personal reserves if you have, you're fortunate to have that, or other things that's going to permit you to rebuild. So people ought to think in terms of longer term, what the impact's going to be and how they're going to succeed in making that happen.
Well, I learned today, well, just from reading all this, that a tsunami is not going to be covered because it's a flood and you need special insurance for that.
Correct.
And the other thing I learned is that, you know, in terms of FEMA help and such, I know I'm only speaking to a small section of the community here. People who have a second home. Second homes don't count. Second homes don't get replaced.
No.
Second homes don't get... Oh, Dan?
And too, just to follow on with what Robert's saying with some of that assistance, not so much here on the Kenai Peninsula, but folks in Anchorage and the Matsu Valley are experiencing that right now with the earthquake. And I have been hearing things about, well, when it's all said and done, it's $3,000. You know, and most of us, in fact, I just got my homeowner's renewal and I noticed that there was a big thing on my front page that said, this is not earthquake insurance. So I kind of chuckled about that, but it isn't. And so that long-term recovery, when we talk about businesses, individuals, as much as they can, should take some of those same precautions, if at all possible, with some of those off-site things and important documents. And we've gone through with some of the wildfires and providing assistance. And unfortunately, it's even the simple things like, I need to go down to HEA and try and get a copy of my electric bill to prove my residency. You know, so some of those types of things are really important to think about ahead of time.
Right. Having your papers, prescriptions, all those mm-hmm. sorts of things in a fireproof box.
Fireproof box. I scan a lot of my stuff in the cloud so I can just pull it off anywhere. It helps. Sometimes you need originals, but a lot of times, you know, that'll suffice. Policy numbers and phone numbers and things like that.
So speaking of phone numbers, if anyone listening but has a question for Dan Nelson from the Kenai Peninsula Borough, or Mark Kirko, the new fire chief, Robert Purcell, or Ryan Browning from Homer Police Department, the number to call is 235-7721, or across the bay, 1-800, there it is, 929-5224. So call if you have any questions about preparedness, because one of the goals for this coffee table program is that people might, in this week before the national EAS test, go to the Office of Emergency Management's page, the Be Prepared page, and get some of these materials to make your own plan. And if you have the time and the inclination, you might, a week from today, when you hear that alert, see about a mock-up, see about putting that plan into action. So if you have any questions, call 235-7721. And while we're on the subject, I want to talk a little bit to Mark Kirko and Ryan Browning about how you prepare the volunteer fire department, or how the police department is prepared to respond to emergencies. Mark?
Well, the fire department, we meet weekly to cover a whole gamut of different situations we might need to respond to. And obviously, we work a lot with our response partners, the police department, Office of Emergency Management, local mutual aid partners. So we'd meet regularly and discuss these things. We try to do annual drills of these larger events like tsunamis and earthquake preparedness, things of that nature. Not to mention doing a lot of teaching also in the community on being prepared for these types of situations. So we do a really good job, I think, of meeting the needs of our volunteer responders, of preparing them to respond to these types of events on a regular basis. We don't get as often a chance to maybe work with our partners at the police department, but those are some things I think Ryan and I will probably talk about in the near future of how do we establish a more cohesive response plan between our agencies.
And what about you, Ryan Browning?
Absolutely. For us, making sure that everybody's up to speed with the emergency operations plan for the city, knows what to do in a major event. I think we're going to have less to do with some of the planning stuff as the fire department will be, as we're going to be boots on the ground, kind of helping out where we can for whatever situation comes up. So not as much as fire, but just making sure that we all know what the plan is and where we need to be should something happen. So
communication seems to be the key, be making sure the right people can all get information out and people can get in touch with their families and...
Yeah, absolutely. Communication is, you know, the biggest key and probably usually the greatest challenge that we typically have when we have a situation like this. Today, right now, when nothing's happening, I can tell you we have, you know, upwards of 40 volunteers that help the community in situations like this. However, if it's an earthquake or a tsunami, that might go down to 12 or 20 or maybe even less, depending on where they are and if they've been affected by the emergency. So, you know, part of the plan is how do we, you know, respond to these types of situations with limited people? And where are we going to get the help? You know, and guys like Dan and Robert, for their knowledge of how do we get outside resources to come help us, that's all part of what we discuss, you know, regularly.
And can I get with you, Dan Nelson? Because I know you guys have held large-scale training days.
We do, yeah.
And can you talk a little bit about those? Is there anything coming up?
Sure. There's not anything coming up. We actually just finished a pretty large-scale drill in April in the Central Peninsula, but that is one of my goals is to be able to bring that stuff around the peninsula. So working with the folks down here in Homer. Homer's in a great position because you've got a great police department, you've got a fire department, you've got those volunteers, you've got neighboring departments that do that. And really what the borough's role in this is to assist in preparedness. So whether we do some training, whether we do some practice and exercise, but really we're here to support the cities. So we're here to support City Hall, the fire department, the police department, make sure they get what they need. As you know, you said, if you need something that's kind of that you don't have in the city, we need to get something from the state or FEMA or, you know, depending what that situation is. That's really a lot of the borough's role is to support the cities. Now, if you live in an unincorporated area, so Anchor Point or out East End Road, the borough also takes that primary role of response as well. So in the city manages that, but if you're in an unincorporated area, that's managed from the borough level from my office as well. So kind of a dual role that we play. So we are consistently doing a lot of those things throughout the year. And, you know, summer's not usually a real great time to do those things, but fall's coming up and we are starting to talk about what that schedule's going to look like.
All right. And I wanted to talk about the difference between, well, I guess it's more of the similarities. It's not just your family that needs an emergency plan. It's your workplace as well. Which brings me to the workplace of most children, the school. Because, you know, we've talked about earthquake and tsunami, but there are a great many other things that might affect, you know, the road could be flooded out. There could be all kinds of things could be going on. And I know you guys, the Homer Police Department, definitely trains for if there's an emergency at the school. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know one of the things I read was that parents should know, don't call the school when it's on lockdown. Can you confirm that?
It creates a lot more confusion for everybody, and then parents showing up as well, you know, where your kid's at and making sure everybody's accounted for.
Well, these days, a lot of people have their own devices, It's not as difficult as it used to be. But I know that the recommendation is don't call.
Yeah, don't show up. You know, figure the school's going to take care of them and take them where they need to go to be a safe place.
And listen for the places that are authorized to send out communication to get your information that way.
Sure.
There are emergencies that will cause the school to lock down. Nobody gets in or out. There are emergencies where the school then becomes the place where everyone is evacuating to. I know that we were recommending during the earthquake on the 30th of November that everyone go to the high school because that's the evacuation place. And I should point out at this moment that that South Peninsula Hospital is not an evacuation place. Dan, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and that was something that we definitely saw in that November 30th earthquake is, you know, as we think about public areas in the Homer area that are high ground, of course, the hospital and the high school pop right into the mines. But listen for that official instruction. Listen for things that are coming over the radio or things that are coming in from official social media sources. Sometimes those social media sources aren't always accurate, as we talked about earlier.
More than not accurate, we often have to monitor comments because odd and needy people post deliberately misleading or incorrect information.
That can happen.
And
absolutely.
So you have to be careful. Get it from, well, as you were saying, from the official source.
Official sources. So when we're talking about schools and things, the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District has got a great social media presence. KPB Alerts or the Kenai Peninsula Borough, those are official sources of information. KBBI, of course, will verify information before putting it out. So thinking about those things, and something your neighbor said may have been a rumor or, you know, something else. So think about those things, but just to kind of follow up a little bit with what Ryan said was, this goes back to, again, that communications plan and that family plan. When you have children in school, you know, the likelihood they're in school all day, just like you're at work all day, there might be something that'll happen. The school has a great emergency plan, but keep in mind that basically the take-home message for parents as we're getting into the school year now is your children are safe at school. We have procedures. The staff are well-trained. We're going to make sure that they're safe. Don't come to the school until you hear word. You know, don't be calling. Don't try and interfere, because there's a very specific plan, and we might be relocating. We might be doing all these types of things. But our goal is to keep your children safe, and that's the goal of everybody that works for these schools. So keep that in mind as we talk about it. There's a whole process called reunification, where we make sure that people are back with their
parents. People who are separated can find themselves together.
And release to authorized folks and all of that good stuff.
Robert Purcell, looks like you had something to add to that.
Well, I was going to follow on the communications with KBBI's role. KBBI has entered into a formal agreement with the city of Homer in a cooperative agreement to provide information that's accurate and timely to the community, broadly speaking, the whole listening area. And I think that's important, that people do identify the sources that they're going to rely on ahead of time, rather than just going on to Facebook or going on and the first thing they see that pops up is their reliable source. Well, it's not necessarily, and that's essential. I've seen it all over the country. You need to understand who you can go to get the correct information. And, you know, thinking in terms of the schools, one of the challenges that we have on all disasters in Alaska is we have a very limited road system. So if people start migrating towards the event, it quickly plugs things for the emergency providers, whether it's a fire or a police emergency, whatever the event is. If you don't absolutely need to go there, don't go there, because you get in the way and literally plug
it can create system. Dangerous situations for responders.
Right. Well, not only dangerous, but we can't get the job accomplished. In other words, you can endanger the people you hope to assist by being in the way. So
I think we saw a little of that. Oh, I want to expand that a little bit, because during the Swan Lake fire, crews had to stop work and helicopters had to ground because people wouldn't keep their drones out of there. So remember, go, Dan,
yeah,
go.
No, I mean, that's a great example. And also some flights that violated the temporary flight restriction. As soon as that happens, all airborne firefighting work stops. And now you think about how many planes, how many helicopters, and how many firefighters now can't work to get that job done, just like Robert said. So, you know, first of all, I'll speak on behalf of the first responders in the room. They can correct me, but you know, everybody appreciates the help. We appreciate the community supporting first responders, but sometimes that support is great to be from the sidelines for now until the situation is stabilized, and then listen for that official information on how to help. For instance, just on that Swan Lake fire, you know, a lot of people wanted to provide meals and bake cookies for firefighters and things. Well, we can't, unfortunately, we can't do that. It's food safety, and we have standards, but you know, a great thing was writing cards or showing banners of support. So there's great ways to do it that support and help the first responders in the room.
Right there in the moment, no, you can't bring sandwiches because they can't eat them. But what can a person in this community do year round to support the Homer Volunteer Fire Department and the Homer Police Department when it's time to act during an emergency? What can the public do? Well, I guess they could join the Homer Volunteer Fire Department, couldn't they?
They could, and we have an EMT class coming up here very shortly in September that if they wanted to join, they could do that. I think the biggest thing they can do is just become informed.
Make a plan.
And part of that plan is understanding how we're going to respond to things. You know, we talked about that a minute ago of not going to the scene. A lot of that turns into us not being able to get to the scene in a timely manner, in an efficient manner, if the roads are all plugged with private vehicles. And then the other side of that is, what if we decide that then the evacuation part needs to take place and now we can't get buses through or vehicles out because the roads again are plugged with people that want to go and help out. We really appreciate the fact that people want to help, and the best way to help is just to become informed and understand what our job is so that we can effectively go do that job.
And Ryan Browning from the Homer Police Department, you have anything to add to that?
I think Chief nailed it.
All right then, Chief. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back, and I want to talk a little bit more about the KPB alert system. And you are tuned to the coffee table. The topic is emergency preparedness, and the time is 9:30 a.m. You are tuned to KBBI Homer, AM 890. This is the coffee table, and emergency preparedness is the topic. In the studio, Dan Nelson from the Kenai Peninsula Borough Office of Emergency Management, new Homer Volunteer Fire Department Chief Mark Kirko, Robert Purcell from KBBI and formerly of FEMA, and Ryan Browning from the Homer Police Department. Now, a week from today, Wednesday, about 10:20 is the estimation, you will hear on your radio, on your television, you will hear an emergency alert, a test of the emergency alert system. And so the whole goal of this show is to convince people to make a plan in this week between now and the time the test runs, and possibly try and carry out that plan a little bit, or at least have the conversations. So Dan Nelson, infrastructure is the word of the day. And what do you mean by that?
So this is something that we really like to talk about. And when we talk about emergency preparedness, one of the things we really encourage folks to do is just to take a minute and think about the infrastructure that we have now. So Alaska has changed quite a bit in 50 years, as has technologies and around the nation. But, you know, we used to be kind of a pretty self-reliant folk. We had homesteads and subsistence lifestyles and things like that.
In fact, it's tricky. It's part of our mythology that we are still that self-reliant.
It is.
And everybody needs to take a look at that.
Yep. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes it's not. And, you know, that's up for people to decide. But what we will try and do is really think about this. Now, we're talking about emergencies. We're talking about disasters, things that can happen. So what I challenge the folks listening to do is to think about just today. So here on a Wednesday morning, it's just a little after 9:30 now. So what infrastructure did you interact with today? What things did you do? So I bet most of us have got some heat in our homes. We've got electricity, you know, some of those basic things that they're kind of always with us. How many people use their cell phone today? How many people only have a cell phone? Or how many people use the internet?
Right. Who doesn't have a landline anymore? Yeah. Who no longer has more than one source of heat in their house?
Yeah, exactly. You know, what is the backup to anyone? Do you have backups for any of those things? Did you travel on a road today? You know, did you travel in your vehicle today? Did you use fuel? So think about all those things that now make this way of life. I mean, technology is amazing. I've got this smartphone in my hand that I can manage an emergency from, if it works. But think about all these things now. So what is your family's backup? What's your backup? What's your business's backup? Does your business have only one source of heat, one source of internet, and use IP-based phones? So this is asking a lot of questions, but it's something for each of us to think about in our own personal circumstances. Do we have more than one way in and out of our house? Do we have backups to those things? What would happen if on November 30th the Port of Alaska was damaged more than it was, and maybe it takes 4 or 5 days to get the trucks back into the grocery stores? So that's what we mean when we talk about infrastructures. Think about what we interact with on a daily basis and what happens when it's not there.
Right. Is the harbor wrecked? Can we get goods that way? I have a question for you about the Kenai Peninsula Borough Office of Emergency Management. So it's a physical office, right?
Yes.
It's not just a state of mind. It's a physical office. Do you have landlines there?
Yes, we absolutely do.
Where do you guys back up your data?
So we have an offsite backup, which is a physical backup, and we also have a second physical backup. If anybody's ever seen it, there's a big command vehicle we have running around, a big old Freightliner RV-looking thing, and it's backed up to there as well. So we have that. We have backups to our IP phones. We have satellite phones, radios galore. We mentioned communications. Chief Kirko mentioned that communications was the biggest thing, so we back up to a lot of different levels in that.
And I want to talk about the KPB alert system, because if you have already signed up for KPB alerts, you get things like highway closures sometimes, school.
I think we've
gotten one in like extreme snow situations.
Yeah, so KPB alerts, basically it's an emergency, it's a telephone notification system. So,
but you're not going to get one a week from today.
No,
it's not a part of that.
Not part of the test. So,
but still, tell people why it's valid, why they need one, why they need to be a part of it.
So what we've tried to do, and we're continuing to build this system out and to make it more accessible, and the city has access to it to post information as well as all the other cities and agencies. But basically what it is an automated system, so we can call landlines if you have them, we can call your cell phones, we can text you, we post on social media on Facebook and Twitter. But if there's something developing, and this has got to be pretty serious, life safety, so tsunami warning, evacuations, there might be things like if we have a missing child or missing vulnerable adult in your neighborhood, we might use that. But essentially what it is allows us to geographically on a map, identify where we need to send a message, and we can get that out. But now the trick is, if you only have your mobile phone, you have to sign up. We don't have your cell phone number. So one of the things we really want to encourage folks to do, it takes just a few minutes, is what you do is you'll sign up, put your home address in, and then whatever phone numbers you want to associate with that. So it basically gives it a geographic point that we can call. So in just a second, I'm going to tell you how to register that. So grab a pen and paper if you haven't signed up for that before. If you've already signed up, that's all right. But on your cell phone, if you've one of those folks that does that, you can text KPB to 99411. So again, that's KPB to 99411. You're going to get a link sent back to you. Tap on that, fill out that form right on your phone. Or if you've got a computer, you can go to alerts.kpb.us and do the same thing. So we just talked about now how cell phones and infrastructure might not always work, but in a lot of
in many cases
I don't like to say routine emergencies because people, I don't like that word, but it's kind of how we think about it. We can still get information out to you. The city can do that, the troopers, various agencies can get that information out. So that's a great thing to do as we're talking about our national periodic tests. So we talked about earlier, we're going to get our AM radio with our hand crank and also sign up for KPB alerts. We've got both of those things covered, kind of the traditional technology and the new technology.
And Robert Purcell, you were talking about the city website being a good source.
Correct. They also have a lot of information on the website for Homer specifically, and for folks in the surrounding areas, including the tsunami inundation maps and other information. There's a link there that you can actually see that map overlaid on the Google Maps so that you can actually drill right down to your house and see where that boundary is in relationship to your house. So it's a great resource. There's all kinds of materials, including copies of the city's emergency operation plan and other things there. And the city's continuing to build that. That's a work in progress, and I think there's more materials will be added as they're developed. I'd like to say something about infrastructure, because I saw a wonderful example, or a very devastating example, and that is when there's a loss of electricity, there's a loss of gasoline. So people say, well, I'm fine at home, I can go drive to the grocery store, the power's out, but they can't get gas out of the ground because every gas station basically counts on electric pumps, and none of them that I know of have backup generators. If somebody
here in town,
does,
you mean?
Yeah, if somebody does, I'd certainly like, the fire department would like to know.
Love
about
to
that.
Love to know.
But that's a key piece, is that we assume all kinds of things are going to continue. But the second order effect of lack of electricity is also a lack of gasoline, and probably a lack of being able to refill propane.
Right, and your gas heater may not work. I mean, we have a little generator for that purpose, so that we can keep it running if we lose power. But
and so those are the kinds of things that need to be considered. It's disasters here in Alaska are particularly significant because of our remote location and our tenuous transportation routes and our tenuous utilities, because they're not grids in the sense that in many parts of the country there are. You know, we have one way to get to Homer, unless we come by boat or air.
Well, I mean, overland.
Overland, there's
one
only
road,
one
in
road.
Or out.
You live in other parts of the country, there's a dozen ways to get there.
And that, you know, we've seen over the years that road can be compromised by truck hazmat spills, can be compromised by floods, by earthquake, by fire. There are a lot of things that could keep the road, make the road impassable. But I want to talk to, because Dan Nelson, I want to talk to you about kpboem.com. Mm-hmm. During the Swan Lake fire over the last few weeks, I have relied on that page every day for maps, for statistics, for breaking down what's happening in different places, for, you know, dividing up the information. Can you talk a little bit about that site and what's on it? Because it's part of the incident management team. I can get to them from there. But
right.
it's the borough's emergency management clearinghouse, it seems.
It's essentially designed to be exactly what you said. It's a one-stop shop for information about incidents that are in progress. So it doesn't get updated if, you know, everything is going fine. You know, in fact, we just posted our last update on the Swan Lake fire, because that is luckily in a good state right now and is being transitioned away. But that's a place where we've set up, and the borough set it up, but it's not really, we don't take too much credit for it, because it's a joint product, and it's something that the public information staff from the cities, from many different agencies, local, state, and federal, can all push information to. And so the idea here is, you know, we talked a little bit about social media earlier in the show before the break, where, you know, sometimes that information just isn't reliable. And so this is designed to be a site that is getting accurate, verified information out from whoever it comes from, whoever's responsible for that. And so the borough doesn't vet it. It doesn't change anything. It simply just allows those folks to get information onto it. So during the Swan Lake fire, we had information from the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge on closures and different recreation status, a little bit from the National Forest as well as the information being done from the incident management teams, as well as some of the stuff from the Office of Emergency Management. So for folks, this is a great thing to bookmark or favorite on their phone or their laptop. It's kpboem.com. And that's, again, a one-stop shop for good, accurate, verified information. Might take a little bit of time, especially if we're in the immediate throes of an event where something has just started. So, for instance, if we have a tsunami alarm go off right now, it's going to take a little bit of time to get into that. And that's where something I didn't mention with KPB Alerts, follow KPB Alerts on Facebook and Twitter, and that's where that real quick life safety information will go.
Well, it looks like there's a call from Melanie. Stand by. Melanie.
Okay, this may have been asked previously, but I just turned on the radio. And my question is, if you live out East End and beyond Catchmack Drive and the road falls apart, is there any plan for that?
Thanks, Melanie.
And you can't access town? Yeah.
Anybody want to take that?
Melanie, thanks for that question. So I don't want to say there is a plan for that, but there is. And so let me explain a little bit on that. So when we talk about something like East End Road or any of the other roads that are one road in, one road out, we work with generally the Department of Transportation as a state road to create some alternate workarounds for that. So depending on where and situation specific is going to depend on our actions, but one of the priorities for all emergency response agencies, whether this be a road in the city limits or outside the city limits, is we want to make sure that, you know, Chief and his firefighters and EMTs can get there if there is an emergency. the fire department and those types of folks. So we want to keep that access open. So while I really can't really say a specific plan for that, that is a high priority, is that transportation infrastructure. We have had times, not here on the South Peninsula, but I'll give an example in the East Peninsula, where during flood events in Seward, Lowell Point, that small community just past Seward, was cut off. And we actually were using water taxis at some points to get people into town and back. So there's a couple different, you know, options depending on what. But in general, I guess the best way for me to answer your question for our emergency plan is that is a high priority to make sure that transportation stays in effect, because we want, again, emergency services to be able to get there, but also folks to get to work, to school, and do those things as a for their normal day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Melanie.
One of the things that you see on major disasters is when you lose infrastructure, whether it's roads, your water systems, your electricity, that's a huge priority to restore, because that is life safety. We often think in terms of people threatened by the fire, or people in collapsed buildings, or things like that. That's one part of the life and risk. But the other part is, if you don't have safe water, if you don't have sanitation, you don't have electricity. A lot of people depend on medical equipment that requires electricity. There's all these other effects, and so there's a huge effort to restore infrastructure as quickly as possible, because it's essential for literally the life safety of the community.
Well, we have just about come to the end. I had said we might do a short Q&A with our new Homer Volunteer Fire Department Chief. But you know what, Chief Mark Kirko, I think we should make an appointment and talk at length later, because I could come to the fire station at your convenience and we can talk a little bit with the goal of introducing you to people. But have you been around in the community meeting people? I guess that's what you've been doing. But you were dealing with a plane crash, the boat capsizing. You've been dealing with a lot since you got here.
Yeah, it's. I've only been here for 3 weeks now, and it seems like I've had enough work to keep me busy for 6 months over that time. But I'm enjoying every minute of it. You know, I started my fire service career in Alaska, and I'm glad to be back here.
Oh, really? Where?
Cordova was my first duty location, and then I moved to Skagway for about 7 years. So, and then a family illness took us out of the state for a while, for the last 6 years, we've been trying to get back. So finally, we're here, and I am really, really glad to be here. My wife is really glad to be here, and I look forward to spending more time with you talking about maybe some public safety concerns
that I
have. Yeah,
let's sit down for a public safety conversation.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
And now is the time when I want to invite all of you to share anything or make any statement that you came here to make but nobody asked you or didn't come up. If there's any kind of outreach or advice, anything that I'm going to end with you, Dan, because I know what I want you to tell people. But Ryan Browning from Homer Police Department, thank you so much for being here. And is there anything that needs to go out on the air?
I think we've covered everything today.
You feel like it was a good conversation?
A good conversation.
Okay. And Robert Purcell.
Well, to follow on with that, please have that conversation at home with your family or in your workplace, and how you're going to handle emergencies. Begin with that and build on it, please.
And Chief Mark Kirko.
You know, Homer's such a wonderful little community, still relies heavily on volunteerism for a lot of different things. I encourage people to look out into the community and see where they might be an effective helper to the needs of the community. So obviously the fire department's one of those places.
And Dan Nelson from the Kenai Peninsula Borough Office of Emergency Management, where can people access the great amount of information that you have for people to sit down and make their plans?
Absolutely. So a couple websites we'll throw out. First is the City of Homer. Remember, especially if you live in the city, to reference that. cityofhomer-ak.gov, I believe, or let's Google City of Homer, so I was not prepared for that question. But also the Office of Emergency Management, so that website is kpb.us/emergency, and that'll take you right there. And take next week as that National Periodic Test as just a time to think about that, and then maybe, as Robert said, sit down to dinner with the family and be talking about those types of things. And there's resources here if you live in the City of Homer, the fire department, the police department, Everybody here is willing to support and help and give that information, and the borough stands behind the city to support them. And of course, we're available for anybody outside the city or in their unincorporated areas. We can talk with them as well. So our website's got that contact information.
Well, you are tuned to KBBI Homer. This has been the Coffee Table, and emergency preparedness is the topic. 1 week from today, the national EAS test will come across your TV and your radio, and we hope that you use the resources you learned about today to make a plan for your family, to make a plan at work, and to be prepared. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. This has been the Coffee Table. Thanks for joining us.